Today on the podcast, I have the pleasure of talking to Tom White, the manager of the Murrum Bateman Field Days. We are talking all things volunteers. So let's jump in and chat to Tom.
I manage the Murrum Bateman Field Days, which is a two-day agricultural field days event held yearly on the third weekend in October. The event was started in 1979 and has only been cancelled during that time because of the COVID-19 pandemic. This year we had about 275 exhibitors on site and about 13,500 people through the gates for the weekend.
Can you please share, Tom, what your governance model is and the structure of the team behind the event?
Sure. So the field days are run under the Murrum Bateman Progress Association. There's a small volunteer executive board, so president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and three board members. And while the field days are its biggest undertaking every year, it's not its only focus. I say that to say that it's not a straight field days committee. They've got other stuff on as well. As the manager, I report to the board throughout the year about the progress and how things are going. And then the field days paid staff and also some different manager positions like the entertainment manager, and we've got an equestrian manager and stuff like that. They report to me as well throughout the year.
Yeah, okay. And is that, so when you say the Murrum Bateman Progress Association and having that small volunteer executive board, are they all skill-based? Is that like in terms of how they're actually elected to be part of that board, are they elected based on different skill set?
No, very much not. It's just they have a yearly AGM, and whoever wants to do the roles puts up their hands and is elected to that role.
Yeah, okay. Tell me about the paid staff that you have. So I believe that you do have some paid expertise that are part of the team. You're not 100% volunteer run?
No, so we have small paid staff. None of us are full-time. We all do it. There's a few contract positions and stuff like that. So the manager position, which is mine, is a contract position. And we've got a promotions officer, which is also on contract. And then a part-time admin or bookings person who's responsible for the site bookings. And they work a couple of days a week throughout the year. And that gets ramped up closer to the event. We normally have a finance bookkeeper role, but as we haven't been able to fill that position, it's currently being done on a volunteer basis by the association's treasurer. And we also have a paid groundskeeper, grounds manager role, which is just run for about the month before the event, during the event, and then probably half a month or so after the event to clean up and stuff like that. So that's more of just a hands-on role, and that's the role I used to do.
And how long has the event actually had paid expertise? Has that always been the case, or has it been something that's more recent?
I've been involved since 2011, and they were all paid roles then. But I think it's gone up a bit, and as the events got bigger, and obviously keeping track of everything has become a bit more hands-on. Those roles are probably expanded from what they used to be. I've heard stories from, back in the day where the manager pretty well just rock up the week before and throw some lines on the ground and put a few ads in the local paper and people would show up, that it'd be great to kind of do it like that. But it's definitely turned into a year-long planning process to make sure it all works properly.
Wonderful. And what about volunteers? So how many volunteers does it actually take to plan and deliver the field days?
Yep. So our event relies on a lot of volunteers, and it's something that we're quite proud of as an event. Speaking to other field days that we're involved in as part of the AFDA, we try and use volunteers wherever we can. Mm-hmm. And so we have two different groups. We've got what we call our event volunteers, which are the local people that come and physically set up the site and mark the lines and man the gate entry. And we had about 118 of them this year. So that's setting up the event, working during the actual weekend, and also helping pack up after the event. We all have what we call paid for service volunteers. And that was about just under 590 volunteers this year. And that involves community groups that we pay for event services. So things like entry gate ticketing, cleaning the tables, cleaning up the toilets, rubbish collection, running the car parking is a very big one. We also had them running the volunteers area and running things like the parents' tent. So in total, we had 707 volunteering roles this year.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot. Is that standard? Like, what has that fluctuated over the years, Tom, or is that usual or typical numbers for the event?
It's probably gone up a bit this year, but that, yeah, that's pretty close to normal. Like, just the RFS, our local RFS guys or and girls, there's about, I think we handed out 350 tickets for them. So they do like the rubbish collection and the car parks, and they also run their own catering site and stuff like that. So they have a massive presence on site throughout the weekend. And it's great that we can give that money back to the community by donating money back to them for their doing the service than having to pay private companies doing it. But it does leave us in the position of they're only volunteering groups, they're only volunteers themselves. And if they can't find volunteers, then we've got to look at other options. But we were very lucky that, well, not lucky, but they were all managed to fill the roles they needed for the weekend.
That's great.
For instance, the local church that runs a catering site probably couldn't find as many volunteers as they normally could. So they reached out to other churches in the region and they came and helped out. So it's just looking at what they've got and seeing if they can get other groups involved or call on other resources to help them out.
Yeah, that's wonderful, because as I'm sure you're aware, volunteering's always been the biggest challenge for events, no matter what type of event or size or scale of event. And it seems that, you know, even now, it's actually more so now in a post-pandemic environment, it seems to be even more challenging to find suitable volunteers. And a lot of events are even finding it challenging to find skilled staff to assist with events, which is adding more complexity. So this whole thing around how we manage our volunteers, how we recruit the right volunteers, and I think also looking at how we be more efficient with our events is so important, so that we don't need as many volunteers. Because even for you, you know, just to find 700 people, although you can do it, such a big job, isn't it? Like, it's a big job on its own, let alone running an event.
Yeah, so what we find a lot, and it's obviously a problem for most small communities, is that the people that volunteer for so many different organisations. And so even if they wanted to volunteer as an event volunteer for us, if you like, they're already volunteering for the local church, or they're already volunteering rostered on for the RFS. And so even if they wanted to help out, they can't necessarily give the time. And that's another big problem, where even though the community group or any group might have X amount of people on the books, they're already committed to other groups, so they can't necessarily be called upon to help out.
Yeah. Can you share with everybody a bit around the history of how your event has managed volunteers and some of the challenges that you've faced that has led you to implement change? And we're going to talk about that change in a moment, but just share with us a little bit about how this has come about.
Yep. It's probably something I'm pretty passionate about, because I started off as a volunteer for this event back in 2011. I moved into the region, and it's a pretty good story. We used to have the Progress Association used to run a community post office where you used to go and pick up your parcels. And I didn't know it at the time, but the lady serving me was a past manager of the field days. And I rocked up to get my parcel, and she said, are you coming to the working bee on the weekend? And I said, oh, yep, sure, no worries. And then I got my parcel, and that was it. I was in for the field days. And I think the first year I probably only went for an hour or so. And
I love it.
Did a few lines, but then, like, yeah, met the locals and met all the people that are obviously really nice people, and went, oh, this is great. And so next year I did a bit more, and yeah, a few more hours, and then I worked my way up to, I guess, being grounds manager. And during that time, I also got to see how different volunteers manager handled the job and kind of what worked and what didn't work. And like from me as a volunteer. But what I did see there was that I was probably the youngest volunteer they had. And I was at that stage about 35. So I wasn't exactly young myself. I mean, I am, but yeah, there was obviously a lot older demographic. So that was a bit of a worry. The fact that while it's great to have that event experience, we weren't seeing a lot of younger people coming through. So I eventually came on staff as the grounds manager role. And during that time, I made sure to make any volunteer that was working with me to like feel worthwhile, because there was one particular volunteer that he'd only come for a couple of hours each day to help me mark out, but that was great. Like that was an extra pair of hands and I got so much more done, even just for those few hours. So it was really, he got a lot out of it and felt like he was doing something, and I definitely needed the help. So I was making sure that each volunteer, when they were coming down to give me a hand, kind of felt appreciated, and also listening to any feedback they had about what they observed while they were volunteering and how we could change things. Our local town of Murrum Bateman is changing rapidly and growing. So the demographic is changing. We're getting a lot of just straight residential houses, so they don't really have a backyard. It used to be 3 to 5 acre blocks, but now they're just all little townhouses. And most of them move out there for the country lifestyle. We're about half an hour away from Canberra. But they find that once they're out here, it's not quite as relaxing as they first thought, and they're quite time poor. My time as manager of the event also coincided with the start of the COVID-19 pandemic and all the associated challenges with that. As we've just discussed, chief among them was the rapid decline in volunteer numbers. We couldn't just assume people would show up, and had to be as proactive as possible, retaining both our existing volunteers and finding new ones. So that was my big hope, that we'd try and get all these new people that had moved out into the area, that many had probably never volunteered before, and trying to get them in early, if you like. So as I've just discussed, before the RFS or someone else, not snapped them up, but before they got their time commitments, that we'd kind of just say that the field days volunteering is an option and that they should look at that when deciding who they're going to volunteer for. So it was probably about this time was that I first did the Revents volunteering online presentation and started to think that in order to cast the net as wide as possible for volunteers, we need to make the boring but important stuff like OH&S safety induction, rosters and things like that as accessible as possible and able to be done in their own time. For those that have done the presentation, that the meeting graphic that you use rang very true about no one wants to do meetings, and
was that the death by meetings?
Yeah,
I love to use that.
Yeah,
it does. It really resonates with a lot of people. I think they can feel like I've been in that situation.
Yeah, and we used to run volunteer safety meetings the week before the event, and as an organizer, we'd sit there and like maybe one or two people would show up, and you'd do the spiel, and then people would just rock up volunteering on the week without having done the safety event, like any safety briefing. So it was kind of like something's got to change here. And so, yeah, as we all know, everyone's time poor.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the big thing, is to try and put as much thing online as we can so people can look at it in their own time and make their own decisions about it, and kind of not so much being forced into volunteering, but just having it in the back of their mind that, oh, yeah, they need volunteers before our event so they don't book up their schedule.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really, and I guess what you're outlining now is such a similar situation to many events. And I think you've raised a couple of really important points, and particularly when you say, you know, even the town of Murrum Bateman, you know, the demographics is changing. And I think it's kind of like marketing 101, right? So when we're trying to appeal to attendees to come to our events, we need to adapt and evolve to satisfy the needs and expectations of our attendees and our exhibitors, right? Because if we just keep doing the same thing and we lose relevance, then they're not going to come. And it's similar to volunteers. Like the way people volunteer has changed. the dynamics and the mix or the culture of our communities has changed. And I think that therefore says, well, we need to look at volunteering differently. We need to look at how we're doing it. And there was an interesting, so Volunteering Australia just did a whole heap of research, and there was some really, there's some interesting findings in that. Nothing really new that we don't know, but some stuff that was really good to reinforce. And one of the things that stood out to me was, I can't remember what the stat is, but basically what it demonstrated was that people across Australia are more prepared to volunteer in an informal capacity than a formal capacity. So what that means, what they mean by informal, is people are happy to come and help set up marquees on the day, to do a shift in the bar, to, you know, sell tickets at the gate for a few hours. So it's more like we can contribute, but we don't want to feel like we're committed for a long period of time. And I think that's one of the biggest changes we're seeing, and I'm hearing that a lot from events, is they say, well, we don't struggle to get volunteers to help on the day. It's more about how we're getting volunteers to help us in the planning and the lead up to the event. So I think that is really interesting to think about for events, is, well, if that's the case and it's more of this appeal to an informal volunteering role, how do we do that in the planning stages as well? How do we offer opportunities for people to volunteer informally in the lead up stages to the event where we need some extra resourcing capacity? So I think it's just changing the way we do things and always adapting. Tom, tell us about what you've done. What have you done at the field days to, you've been through this process, you've obviously identified the need to change. So what have you actually done to solve some of these challenges with volunteering?
Yep. So the first thing I did was we had a existing email contact list of previous event volunteers. So once again, probably going on one of your points, I started doing like a bit of a newsletter just to keep people up to date of what was happening, and saying, I actually put it out to, I went back through and like kind of found every single email address that we ever had and just put it on everyone. And that allowed me to clean up the email list to see people that opted out and people that no longer wanted to be involved. So it gave me an active email list of people, volunteers that actually wanted to keep volunteering. And in that newsletter, I pretty early on said, oh, look, I'm looking for a new volunteers manager. If anyone's interested, please get in touch. And a bloke called Philip contacted me pretty well out of the blue. He'd just finished up in a senior public service role in Canberra and was looking for a bit of a challenge while working out his new career. So just between jobs, he has a farm in the region. And I guess my point there is that don't just assume that all your volunteers are setting their commitments. Circumstances change, and that you need to draw on your volunteer experience, because there might be, as we just discussed, roles there that you might need a hand with, and that might be their expertise in their day jobs. And they're just kind of waiting to be asked, or they just don't know that you need that help.
Yeah.
So it's all to keep your volunteers in the loop. Whether they read it or not is kind of up to them a little bit. But as I said, I would never have found my, I didn't have to advertise externally, if you like, for my volunteers manager. I found him in our current volunteer group. So after that, I set up an online sign up form on our website, and that not only let the volunteers select what volunteer role they preferred, but also what time and what days they're available to volunteer. The intent behind this was to take the fear out of volunteering, that they would be stuck there all day, or as we just kind of discussed, the old days of saying, oh, we need volunteers, and then just putting person on the gate for 8 hours with no breaks or anything is you can get
long
away with
gone
that, or you can get away with that for 1 year, but they won't be around the next year.
Absolutely.
So it's about taking the barriers out of volunteering and just letting people to be able to choose. And we actually found that a lot of our volunteers were happy to work both days and do multiple shifts, and they just kind of just put me down, whatever. So they were the old days of, yep, we'll just do whatever. But for a few of them, at least, it was, oh, no, I can only do Saturday or I can do Sunday morning. So that was really great. They were able to choose when they volunteers and also what jobs they wanted to do. And so it comes back to your point about having clear volunteer role statements. So people could see that if they didn't want to stand up all day, there was like jobs that they could sit down doing or wasn't as active as other jobs. So they weren't as scared just to get assigned jobs that they might be totally out of their depth with. So the sign-up form was kind of step one. So that allowed us to start planning a lot earlier in the year to see what roles were being filled and what roles we needed extra volunteers for. And then we could also contact our existing volunteer group, but also put the call out on social media and other channels if we needed extra roles filled. But yeah, it all comes down to having the volunteer role statements so people could clearly see what roles they were volunteering for. So once we had them signed up, what we also did was we created a volunteers portal on our website, and that the volunteers had their own separate logins that held all the documents they needed to access in their roles. So it was like the rosters, but also the online, the safety induction form. So they could read through all that and tick all the boxes and acknowledge they read it. So that means they were across all our safety policies we needed for the event. And once that was done, we emailed them their event entry tickets. So it was a way to make sure that they'd actually done the induction form before they came on site, because otherwise they couldn't get in. But I should also add that you also always need a plan B. And as we all know, our volunteers are great, but some of them say, oh, we don't use computers. And so as much as work you want to put in for the online side of it, we also had paper versions on site. And that was mainly for the setup crew and stuff like that, when they were happy to read through all that and then sign it. And then we just scanned them in and then added it to the volunteer information. So it was all in one spot if needed. I might add that one of the major issues we encountered this year by moving everything online was relying on email for communication. We set up a generic volunteers at whatever your event's called email. And that was to try and keep the emails coming from the one source. Because in previous years, it had just been the volunteers manager's personal email. And obviously that's a bit problematic when you change volunteers managers and stuff like that. And the idea behind that was also in the hope that by staying on the one email, things wouldn't go to junk mail as much. But we had a couple of problems that relies on volunteers both checking and reading their emails. And we also used the MailChimp software as the mail out service, but many of these seemed to go to junk mail and were missed by volunteers. We found out probably a month out before the event that not a lot of people had actually done the online induction forms. And so we had to physically email them individually to kind of get around the junk filter, which obviously was a lot more time consuming for the volunteers manager. But after we did that, we did get a rapid take up in, and whether that was just people, oh, it's only a month away, I'll still wait, whether it was just people putting off, or it was a bit hard to tell, going, oh, yeah, there's still plenty of time to do it. But yeah, that was the big thing that we're going to look at for next year, is that how else do you communicate with your volunteers if everything's online?
Yeah.
With real issues with either people not opening emails or claiming they didn't get them, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, that's something we need to really look at.
Yeah, that's tough, isn't it? The whole communication is the hardest thing. I feel like it's the most important thing, but it's also the most challenging thing is to how do you communicate to reach everybody so it's the most effective but also efficient? It's really tough. And I know there's lots of ways you can do it through technology, but as you said, a lot of people that volunteer in events that we work with are more mature age people in our community, and they don't use technology as much as we do in everyday life. So to rely on that is presenting a bit of a risk.
Yeah. And it's something that it was meant to make the process more streamlined. And we were hoping it was. And we sent out a volunteer survey last week or last couple of weeks, and that doesn't finish till next week. So it'd be interesting to see the feedback we get from that, because we definitely asked questions in our survey about how they found the sign-up process and the online portal. We did, like, anecdotally, we've had feedback from both extremes saying it was nice and easy. And then also, it was too hard. Why can't we just show up and work? But as we all know, they've got to do the safety induction for things like insurance and stuff like that. The days of just showing up and, going straight to work are not over, but you just need to have little things in place to make sure everyone's aware of the safety processes and things like that, to make sure everyone's covered for insurance purposes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Tom. That's excellent. Just a couple more things. I'd love to know what advice that you would have for other events in regional communities that are looking to improve their volunteer management.
Yep, sure. My main thing is be proactive in attracting your volunteers. What that means is, don't just assume they will show up when needed. We found even this year, a few of our long-term volunteers pulled out very close to the event due to different reasons. And that left us in a bit of a lurch as far as event experience goes, because we had a very new team on staff. So I was perhaps relying on them to our experienced volunteers to take a few people under their wing and train them up. So just don't assume that just because they've been showing up for 20 years or something, they'll be available. They probably will be, but also they mightn't be able to do as much time as they previously did. And so I guess look for different roles for them as well, where not so much managing, but it's things where they can pass on their event information to hopefully the next generation, so they don't have to physically bang in that star picket or physically do something. They can say, look, this is how we did it last year, so the new people can learn. We use the National Volunteering Week in May to promote the different roles, and that was more our events in October. So it's a long way away, but it's to A, thank our existing volunteers, but B, give people time to have a think about it and just have it in the back of their mind that they need volunteers. Use as many different options as you can to cast your net as wide as possible for volunteers. So things like the local paper, if you've still got one. We did a letterbox drop in the area for the new residents. Obviously online, social media and stuff like that, posters in the local shops. And what we also did was in person. So we've got a local farmers market type thing, which runs twice a month in our area. So we went down there for the months leading up to the event and just pretty much just stood around and promoted the field days, but also answering questions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that actually proved really handy. We had three, let's say, newly retired farmers that had just moved to the area since we last ran in 2019, just rock up and have a bit of a chat to us. And they were great. They were able to not only volunteer on the weekends, but also during the week, where many of our traditional volunteers would be at work. And it was just the fact that we were there and having a chat to them that they decided that they'd all sign up. And they all became firm friends and, they became a great team, both for the setup and pack up and during the event. So it's removing as many barriers to volunteering as you can. Don't just say, we need volunteers, because that doesn't work anymore. There's a lot of, as we've discussed, there's a lot of different roles needed for our volunteers. And so you need to explain what's needed, when people need to be there and how long. We tried to keep our shifts during the event to, I think it was 3 hours for each shift. So that gave time for people to come in, do the shift, and then have a look around the rest of the field days, either before or after the event. We also, we got another community group to run what we called our volunteers area. And so that meant there was like hot food and drinks available all weekend. So when you started your shift or when you finished your shift, you could go down there and get some food and grab a either a hot or a cold drink. And so, yeah, it was trying to make the volunteering experience as positive as possible. Mm. And the final thing would be to hold a thank you function relatively quickly after the event. It's a good way to thank the volunteers, but it's also a good way to gather feedback from people on the ground while it's still fresh in their mind.
Nice. Some good practical tips there. And what about, aside from the topic of volunteers, Tom, what would be your single piece of advice for regional events?
It's very easy just to focus on your event, especially when it's a big one, because it does take your whole year of planning, and you do tend to get in your own little bubble of how to do things. But my thing would be to reach out to other events in your region and state to find out what worked and what didn't. We all face the same issues on different scales. So we all have to have ticket entry and things like that. So go and visit as many other events as you can, even if it's not the same event as yours that you're running, because A, you're supporting other events, which is great. But I always find that I always pick up something useful just from being an event manager, because you'll just wander in and you'll go, oh, that's an interesting setup, or that's, why have they done that? Or that's a great spot to put the information booth, or things like that. There's always a million things that you'd pick up on as an event manager. And so I try and visit not only other field days, but like ag shows and like the royal shows and things like that, just to see how they do it. And I always come away with different ideas. I'm lucky because we're part of the AAFDA, which is the Association of Agricultural Field Days of Australasia. And so I was able to visit and speak to other field days to find out practical things this year, like how to deal with all the mud and what's the best way to get exhibitors in your car park. And then things like how their ticketing system works or not works. And so it's practical issues like that. And even it's things of like, you'll hear from the organizer, like, oh, we do it this way. And then you'll speak to people on the ground or exhibitors, and you might get a different take on what the exhibitors have told you. What the people who run it have told you. So, yeah, I found that really handy, just to always go to other events and, just see what other people are doing, because otherwise you just kind of stay with your own, not closed mind, but it's very easy to go, well, it worked last time, we'll just continue doing it that way.
Yeah. But
your event doesn't grow if you do it that way. It can only go plateau or go downhill. You've got to keep up with the times and see what's happening around you as far as events go.
Absolutely. Good one. Thank you so much, Tom. That's been great. You've shared so many great insights in terms of volunteering. We know it's a tough topic and a tough aspect of events to manage, but what you've done at the field days to start to shift and provide some solutions to those challenges is really encouraging. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. And I guess the point of that is that we did have enough volunteers for our roles, which talking to a lot of other events, they didn't get enough volunteers for their roles. And unsure of what they did before their event, but yeah, it was, you've got to be on top of it. You can't just, I'll put that task off to next month or next week. It's something that needs to be continued all year, even if it's not broadcasting it, if you like, it's making sure you've got plans in place and working on the back end side of it. Yeah, it's very much not a last minute thing you can leave.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Tom. It's been excellent. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. And just personally, thank you for your courses. I've got a lot out of them over the years.
And
it's really helped me just see I'm on the right track, because you often think, oh, because people look at you weirdly, or not look at you weirdly, but they kind of go, why am I putting so much time and effort into volunteers? We've always had them. What's he doing? But it's really great to see that, yeah, what you're saying does have practical things. And it's meant, yeah, this year that we were able to run, even with all those volunteers. Yeah, but it's meant very much that there were systems in place and I could go and look at things to make it all happen. So, yeah, it was a great help.
Nice. Keep doing what you're doing. There you go, another great chat with a regional event expert. Make sure you check out our other episodes in the podcast for great insights and thought-provoking conversations on best practice event management in regional communities.